This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Kelly Becher of Mattapoisett, Massachusetts. Don Quixote, Volume 1, by Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra. Translated by John Ormsby. Part 2, Chapters 4 through 5. Chapter 4, of what happened to our knight when he left the inn. Day was dawning when Don Quixote quitted the inn, so happy, so gay, so exhilarated at finding himself now dubbed a knight, that his joy was like to burst his horse girth. However, recalling the advice of his host as to the requisites he ought to carry with him, especially that referring to money and shirts, he determined to go home and provide himself with all, and also with a squire, for he reckoned upon securing a farm laborer. A neighbor of his, a poor man with a family, but very well qualified for the office of squire to a knight. With this object, he turned his horse's head toward the village, and Rocinante, thus reminded of his old quarters, stepped out so briskly that he hardly seemed to tread the earth. He had not gone far when out of a thicket on his right there seemed to come feeble cries as of someone in distress, and the instant he heard them, he exclaimed, "Thanks be to heaven for the favor it accords me, that it so soon offers me an opportunity of fulfilling the obligation I've undertaken, and gathering the fruit of my ambition. These cries, no doubt, come from some man or woman in want of help, and needing my aid and protection." And wheeling, he turned Rocinante in the direction where the cries seemed to proceed. He had gone but a few paces into the wood when he saw a mare tied to an oak, and tied to another, and stripped from the waist upwards a youth of about 15 years of age, from whom the cries came. Nor were they without cause, for a lusty farmer was flogging him with a belt, and following up every blow with scoldings and commands, repeating, "Your mouth shut and your eyes open," while the youth made answer, "I won't do it again, master mine! By God's passion, I won't do it again, and I'll take more care of the flock another time." Seeing what was going on, Don Quixote said in an angry voice, "This courteous knight! It ill becomes you to assail one who cannot defend himself. Mount your steed and take your lance." For there was a lance leaning against the oak to which the mare was tied. "And I will make you know that you are behaving as a coward." The farmer, seeing before him this figure in full armor, brandishing a lance over his head, gave himself up for dead, and made answer meekly, "Sir knight, this youth that I am chastising is my servant, employed by me to watch a flock of sheep that I have hard by, and he is so careless that I lose one every day, and if I punish him for his carelessness and knavery, he says I do it out of niggardliness, to escape paying him the wages I owe him, and before God and on my soul he lies."
"Lies before me, base clown," said Don Quixote. "By the sun that shines on us, I have a mind to run you through with this lance. Pay him at once without another word. If not, by the God that rules us, I will make an end of you and annihilate you on the spot. Release him instantly."
The farmer hung his head and without a word untied his servant, of whom Don Quixote asked how much his master owed him. He replied, 9 months at 7 reals a month. Don Quixote added it up, found that it came to 63 reals, and told the farmer to pay it down immediately if he did not want to die for it. The trembling clown replied that as he lived and by the oath he had sworn, though he had not sworn any, it was not so much, for there were to be taken into account and deducted 3 pairs of shoes he had given him, and a reel for 2 bloodlettings when he was sick.
"All that is very well," said Don Quixote,
"but let the shoes and the bloodlettings stand as a set-off against the blows you have given him without any cause. For if he spoiled the leather of the shoes you paid for, you have damaged that of his body, and if the barber took blood from him when he was sick, you have drawn it when he was sound. So on that score he owes you nothing."
"The difficulty is, Sir Knight, that I have no money here. Let Andres come home with me, and I will pay him all, reel by reel."
"I go with him," said the youth.
"Nay, God forbid! No, senor, not for the world. For once alone with me, he would raid me like a Saint Bartholomew."
"He will do nothing of the kind," said Don Quixote. "I have only to command, and he will obey me, and as he has sworn to me by the order of knighthood which he has received, I leave him free, and I guarantee the payment."
"Consider what you are saying, senor," said the youth. "This master of mine is not a knight, nor has he received any order of knighthood, for he is Juan Haldudo, the rich of Quintanar."
"That matters little," replied Don Quixote. "There may be Haldudo's knights. Moreover, everyone is the son of his works."
"That is true," said Andres, "but this master of mine, of what works is he the son, when he refuses me the wages of my sweat and labor?"
"I do not refuse, brother Andres," said the farmer. "Be good enough to come along with me, and I swear by all the orders of knighthood there are in the world to pay you as I have agreed, real by real and perfumed."
"For the perfumery I excuse you," said Don Quixote, "but give it to him in reals, and I shall be satisfied, and see that you do as you have sworn. If not, by the same oath I swear to come back and hunt you out and punish you. And I shall find you, though you should lie closer than a lizard. And if you desire to know who it is lays this command upon you, that you be more firmly bound to obey it, know that I am the valorous Don Quixote of La Mancha, the undoer of wrongs and injustices, and so God be with you, and keep in mind what you have promised and sworn under those penalties that have already been declared to you." So saying, he gave Rocinante the spur, and was soon out of reach. The farmer followed him with his eyes, and when he saw that he had cleared the wood and was no longer in sight, he turned to his boy Andres and said, "Come here, my son, I want to pay you what I owe you, as that undoer of wrongs has commanded me."
"My oath on it," said Andres, "your worship will be well advised to obey the command of that good knight. May he live a thousand years, for as he is a valiant and just judge, by rock, if you do not pay me, he will come back and do as he said."
"My oath on it, too," said the farmer, "but as I have a strong affection for you, I want to add to the debt in order to add to the payment." And seizing him by the arm, he tied him up again and gave him such a flogging that he left him for dead.
"Now, Master Andres," said the farmer, "call on the undoer of wrongs. You will find he won't undo that, though I am not sure that I have quite done with you, for I have a good mind to flay you alive."
But at last he untied him and gave him leave to look for his judge in order to put the sentence pronounced into execution. Andres went off rather down in the mouth, swearing he would go look for the valiant Don Quixote of La Mancha and tell him exactly what had happened, and that all would have to be repaid him sevenfold. But for all that, he went off weeping while his master stood laughing. Thus did the valiant Don Quixote right that wrong, and thoroughly satisfied with what had taken place, as he considered he had made a very happy and noble beginning with his knighthood, he took the road towards his village in perfect self-content, saying in a low voice,
"Well mayst thou this day call thyself fortunate above all on earth, O Dulcinea del Toboso, fairest of the fair, since it has fallen to thy lot to hold subject and submissive to thy full will and pleasure a knight so renowned as is and will be Don Quixote of La Mancha, who, as all the world knows, yesterday received the order of knighthood and hath today righted the greatest wrong and grievance that ever injustice conceived and cruelty perpetrated, who hath today plucked the rod from the hand of yonder ruthless oppressor, so wantonly lashing that tender child." He now came to a road branching in four directions, and immediately he was reminded of those crossroads where knight errants used to stop to consider which road they should take. In imitation of them, he halted for a while, and after having deeply considered it, he gave Rocinante his head, submitting his own will to that of his hack, who followed out his first intention, which was to make straight for his own stable. After he had gone about 2 miles, Don Quixote perceived a large party of people who, as afterwards appeared, were some Toledo traders, on their way to buy silk at Murcia. There were 6 of them coming along under their sunshades, with 4 servants mounted and 3 muleteers on foot. Scarcely had Don Quixote descried them when the fancy possessed him that this must be some new adventure, and to help him to imitate as far as he could those passages he had read in his books, here seemed to come one made on purpose, which he resolved to attempt. So, with a lofty bearing and determination, he fixed himself firmly in his stirrups, got his lance ready, brought his buckler before his breast, and, planting himself in the middle of the road, stood waiting the approach of these knight-errants, for such he now considered and held them to be. And when they had come near enough to see and hear, he exclaimed with a haughty gesture, "All the world stand, and let all the world confess that in all the world There is no maiden fairer than the Empress of La Mancha, the peerless Dulcinea del Toboso.
The traders halted at the sound of his language and the sight of the strange figure that uttered it, and from both figure and language at once guessed the craze of their owner. They wished, however, to learn quietly what was the object of this confession that was demanded of them, and one of them, who was rather fond of a joke, and was very sharp-witted, said to him, "Sir Knight, we do not know who this good lady is that you speak of. Show her to us, for if she be of such beauty as you suggest, with all our hearts and without any pressure, we will confess the truth that is on your part required of us."
"If I were to show her to you," replied Don Quixote, "what merit would you have in confessing a truth so manifest? The essential point is that, without seeing her, you must believe, confess, affirm, swear, and defend it. Else ye have to do with me in battle, ill-conditioned, arrogant rabble that ye are, and come ye on one by one as the order of knighthood requires, or all together as is the custom and vile usage of your breed. Here do I bide and await your relying on the justice of the cause I maintain."
"Sir Knight," replied the traitor, "I entreat your worship in the name of this present company of princes, that to save us from charging our consciences with the confession of a thing we have neither seen nor heard of, and one moreover so much to the prejudice of the empresses and queens of the Alcarria and Estremadura, your worship will be pleased to show us some portrait of this lady, though it be no bigger than a grain of wheat, for by the thread one gets at the ball, and in this way we shall be satisfied and easy, and you will be content and pleased. Nay, I believe we are already so far agreed with you that, even though her portrait should show her blind of one eye and distilling vermilion and sulphur from the other, we would nevertheless, to gratify your worship, say all in her favor that you desire."
"She distills nothing of the kind, vile rabble," said Don Quixote, burning with rage. "Nothing of the kind, I say, only ambergris and civet and cotton. Nor is she one-eyed or humpbacked, but straighter than a Gadarama spindle. But ye must pay for the blasphemy ye have uttered against beauty like that of my lady." And so saying, he charged with levelled lance against the one who had spoken, with such fury and fierceness that, if luck had not contrived that Rocinante should stumble midway and come down, it would have gone hard with the rash traitor. Down went Rocinante, and over went his master, rolling along the ground for some distance, and when he tried to rise, he was unable, so encumbered was he with lance, buckler, spurs, helmets, and the weight of his old armor. And all the while he was struggling to get up, he kept saying, "Fly not, cowards and caitiffs! Stay, for not by my fault, but my horses am I stretched here." One of the muleteers in attendance, who could not have had much good nature in him, hearing the poor prostrated man blustering in this style, was unable to refrain from giving him an answer on his ribs, and coming up to him, he seized his lance, and having broken it in pieces, with one of them he began so to belabor our Don Quixote that, notwithstanding, and in spite of his armor, he milled him like a measure of wheat. His masters called out not to lay on so hard, and to leave him alone, but the muleteer's blood was up, and he did not care to drop the game until he had vented the rest of his wrath. And gathering up the remaining fragments of the lance, he finished with a discharge upon the unhappy victim, who all through the storm of sticks that rained on him never ceased, threatening heaven and earth, and the brigands, for such they seemed to him. At last the muleteer was tired, and the traders continued their journey, taking with them matter for talk about the poor fellow who had been cudgelled. He, when he found himself alone, made another effort to rise, but if he was unable and whole and sound, how was he to rise after having been thrashed and well-nigh knocked to pieces? And yet he esteemed himself fortunate, as it seemed to him that this was a regular knight-errant's mishap, and entirely he considered the fault of his horse. However, battered in body as he was, to rise was beyond his power.
End of Chapter 4. Chapter 5, in which the narrative of our knight's mishap is continued. Finding, then, that, in fact, he could not move, he thought himself of having recourse to his usual remedy, which was to think of some passage in his books, and his craze brought to his mind
that about Baldwin and the Marquis of Mantua, when Carlotto left him wounded on the mountainside. A story known by heart by the children, not forgotten by the young man, and lauded, and even believed by the old folks, and, for all that, not a whit truer than the miracles of Mohammed. This seemed to him fit exactly the case in which he found himself, so, making a show of severe suffering, he began to roll on the ground, and with feeble breath repeated the very words which the wounded knight of the wood is said to have uttered. "Where art thou, lady mine? Art thou? My sorrow does not rue. Thou canst not know it, lady mine, or else thou art untrue." And so he went on with the ballad, as far as the lines, "O noble Marquis of Mantua, my uncle and liege lord." As chance would have it, when he got to this line, there happened to come a peasant from his own village, a neighbor of his, who had bent the load of wheat to the mill, and seeing the man stretched there, came up to him and asked him who he was, and what was the matter of him that he complained so dolefully. Don Quixote was firmly persuaded that this was the Marquis of Mantua, his uncle, so the only answer he made was to go on with his ballad, in which he told the tale of his misfortune, and the loves of the emperor's son and his wife, all exactly as the ballad sings it. The peasant stood amazed at hearing such nonsense, and relieving him of the visor, already battered to pieces by blows, he wiped his face, which was covered with dust, and as soon as he had done so, he recognized him, and said, "Señor Quixada," for so he appears to have been called when he was in his senses, and had not changed from a quiet country gentleman into a knight-errant. "Who has brought your worship to this pass?" But to all questions, the other only went on with his ballad. Seeing this, the good man removed as well as he could his breastplate and backpiece, to see if he had any wound, but he could perceive no blood nor any mark anywhere. He then contrived to raise him from the ground, and with no little difficulty hoisted him upon his ass, which seemed to him to be the easiest mount for him, and, collecting the arms, even to the splinters of the lance, he tied them on to Rocinante, and, leading him by the bridle and the ass by the halter, he took the road for the village, very sad to hear what absurd stuff Don Quixote was talking. Nor was Don Quixote less so, for but with blows and bruises he could not sit upright on the ass, and from time to time he sent up sighs to heaven, so that once more he drove the peasant to ask what ailed him. And it could have been only the devil himself that put into his head tales to match his own adventures, for now, forgetting Baldwin, he bethought himself of the Moor Abindarraez, when the Alcaide of Antequera, Rodrigo de Narave, took him prisoner and carried him away to his castle, so that when the peasant asked him again how he was and what ailed him, he gave him for reply the same words and phrases that the captive Abindarraez gave to Rodrigo de Narave, just as he had read the story in Diana of George de Montemayor, where it is applying it to his own case so aptly that the peasant went along cursing his fate that he had to listen to such a lot of nonsense, from which, however, he came to the conclusion that his neighbor was mad, and so made all haste to reach the village to escape the wearisomeness of this harangue of Don Quixote's, who, at the end of it, said, "Señor Don Rodrigo de Narave, your worship must know that this fair Zarifa I have mentioned is now the lovely Dulcinea del Toboso, for whom I have done, and doing, and will do the most famous deeds of chivalry that in this world have been seen, are to be seen, or ever shall be seen." To this the peasant answered, "Señor, sinner that I am, cannot your worship see that I am not Don Rodrigo de Narave, nor the Marquis of Mantua, but Pedro Alonso, your neighbor, and that your worship is neither Baldwin nor Abindarraez, but the worthy gentleman, Señor Quixada?" "I know who I am," replied Don Quixote, "and I know that I may be not only those I have named, but all the 12 peers of France, and even all the 9 worthy, since my achievements surpass all they have done altogether, and each of them on his own account." With this talk and more of the same kind, they reached the village just as night was beginning to fall. The peasant waited until it was a little later, that the belabored gentleman might not be seen riding in such a miserable trim. When it was what seemed to him the proper time, he entered the village and went to Don Quixote's house, which he found all in confusion, and there were the curate and the village barber, who were great friends of Don Quixote, and his housekeeper was saying to them in a loud voice, "What does your worship think can have befallen my master, Señor Licentiate Pero Pere?" For so the curate was called. "It is 3 days now since anything has been seen of him, or hacked, or the buckler, lance, or armor. Miserable me, I'm certain of it, and it is as true as that I was born to die, that these accursed books of chivalry he has, and has got into the way of reading so constantly, have upset his reason. For now I remember having often heard him say to himself that he would turn knight-errant, and go all over the world in quest of adventures. The devil and Barabba with such books that have brought to ruin in this way the finest understanding there was in all of La Mancha." The niece said the same and more. "You must know, Master Nicholas, for that was the name of the barber. It was often my uncle's way to stay 2 days and nights together, poring over those unholy books of misadventures, for which he would fling the book away and snatch up his sword and fall to slashing the walls, and when he was tired out, he would say he had killed 4 giants, like 4 towers, and the sweat that flowed from him when he was weary, he said, was the blood of the wounds he had received in battle, and then he would drink a great jug of cold water and become calm and quiet, saying that this water was a most precious potion which the sage Esquife, a great magician and friend of his, had brought him. But I take all the blame upon myself for never having told you of my uncle's vagaries, that you might put a stop to them before things had come to pass, and burn all these accursed books, for he has a great number, that richly deserve to be burned like heretics. So say I, too, said the curate, but my faith tomorrow shall not pass without public judgment upon them, and may they be condemned to the flames, lest they lead those that read to behave as my good friend seems to have behaved. All this the peasant heard, and from it he understood what was the matter with his neighbor. So he began calling aloud, "Open, your worships, to Signor Baldwin and to Signor the Marquis of Mantua, who comes badly wounded, and to Signora Avendare the Moor, whom the valiant Rodrigo de Navarre, the Alcaide of Antecura, brings captive." At these words they hurried out, and when they recognized their friend, master, and uncle, who had not yet dismounted from the ass because he could not, they ran to embrace him. "Hold," said he, "for I am badly wounded through my horse's fault. Carry me to bed, and if possible send for the wise Urganda to cure and see to my wounds." "See there, plague on it," said the housekeeper at this. "Did not my heart tell the truth as to which foot my master was lame of? To bed with your worship at once, and we will contrive to cure you here without fetching that Urganda. I curse, once more, and 100 times more, on those books of chivalry that have brought your worship to such a pass." They carried him to bed at once, and after searching for his wounds, could find none. But he said they were all bruises from having had a severe fall with his horse Rosinante when in combat with 10 giants, the biggest and the boldest to be found on the earth. So, said the curate, are there giants in the dance? By the sign of the cross, I will burn them tomorrow before the day over. They put a host of questions to Don Quixote, but his only answer to all was, give him something to eat, and leave him to sleep, for that was what he needed most. They did so, and the curate questioned the peasant at great length as to how he found Don Quixote. He told him, and the nonsense he had talked when found, and on the way home, all which made the licentiate the more eager to do what he did the next day, which was to summon his friend the barber, Master Nicholas, and go with him to Don Quixote's house. End of chapter 5.
End of part 5.